Warning, because of the extreme content in this podcast, it is not appropriate for children. It contains depictions of violence, language, and disturbing subject matter. It is recommended strictly for adult audiences. Parental guidance is suggested.
My name is Joey Siaglia, and I am so excited to welcome you back for Season 5. Have you ever had a conversation with a serial killer and lived to tell about it? My brother, Tony Siaglia, a traumatic brain injury survivor, and the subject of the best-selling book, The Serial Killer Whisperer, has spoken for hundreds of hours with some of the world's worst serial killers. These conversations will bring you as close to a serial killer as you'd ever want to be. This season, Tony, along with our father and co-host, Al Siaglia, will share their complete investigation of Joseph Roy Matheny, one of the most depraved criminals that has ever dealt with. Through rare phone conversations, letters, and visits, you will hear a story so evil that even Hollywood couldn't make it up. Matheny is a serial killer that enjoys torturing his victims before he kills them. Admittedly, he loves having sex with their corpses. Joe Matheny also bragged about having a barbecue stand and adding parts of his victims' flesh to the pork sandwiches. The question with us has always been, is this bullshit or is this true? Tony and Al decided to visit the monster in prison and ask him face to face this question. Are you truly a cannibal creator? This is his story, and this is Murder Phone.
Hey, you murder phoniacs. Wow, it's been a while since I've got to do that. As you can see, that's an empty chair over there. I don't know if I'll be able to pull this off alone. You know, this is your host, Tony Siaglia, the serial killer whisperer. You know, the Coxman and I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas and a safe, happy New Year's. Whew, it's pretty hard to believe. We're already into 2024. It is great to be back, and I'm sorry we're a week late. Like my friend John said, you know, he wants Murder Phone to watch so bad he compared us to a Guns N' Roses concert waiting for Axl Rose to get his ass out on stage. Very good analogy, John. Very true. And I've waited for that asshole 6 different times, because I've seen that band 6 different times. Well, unfortunately, the Coxman, he got pretty sick, so that's why we didn't record last week. I'm sick right now. You can hear it in my voice. But I'm fucking here. Why isn't the Coxman here? Forget about that. I'm here. That's right. I'm here. When we were on break, we got some special gifts from Rhonda, who is a longtime friend, fan of the show, and a diamond murder phoniac. Yes, a diamond murder phoniac. Thank you so much, Rhonda. We love you. You're great. Her gifts were so incredibly thoughtful, I have to share them with you. Before I share these gifts, where is the fucking Coxman? Oh. It's a bird. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No! It's the fucking Coxman! Woo-hoo! Yep. Oh, yeah. Lord have mercy.
I bit herself.
Rhonda, Rhonda, Rhonda. That is awesome. Jeez.
Funny to say when I was, but how about now?
No, well, you're like you're like a super cocksman, which is between Spider-Man and Superman and Batman. Then it's the cocksman.
I'm wearing.
You're a mixture of all of them.
I'm wearing.
You should wear it. It looks great.
Yeah, I used to wear it. I'm gonna wear it at night, right? When, fighting crime.
Fighting crime. I'm jealous.
You are.
Yeah, fuck that. I don't get a cape.
Well, you're not the coxman.
I'm not.
Right?
No. Incredible. Isn't that great, though?
It is great. Thank you. Now we're talking.
Now we're talking.
Right?
God, you look great. You do.
You
I mean,
like,
I've always
liked us.
Oh my gosh, Zorro! Right,
Coxman, Super Coxman. Yeah,
Coxman.
All right.
You know, our viewers are going to love this.
They are, right?
Yeah, this gives you another reason why you have to go to our YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah, they have to.
Because
It says right here, the Coxman shows up looking like an idiot. And that's true.
No.
No?
I would never call Batman an idiot.
Well, that's
or
true.
Or Spider-Man
You're
or
right.
Superman an idiot.
You're right. All right. Tell him. Hey, you got that card. Do you want to read that card?
Sure.
It's incredible, and it'll explain exactly what these things are. Right, Tom?
Yes. It is from Rhonda. Still a little pissed off that... And it's not Rhonda's fault, because I don't have a title like the Coxman.
You gave me the name Coxman.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't be upset.
I'm not.
You can borrow it.
Yeah?
Maybe.
Yeah, but I don't have superpowers when I wear it.
You do when you put them on.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, trust me. I got to ask Rhonda's permission, though.
Okay.
Cool?
Cool. Here we go. Dear Anthony. No. Dear Tony. Here it is, the moment you've been waiting for. The super cape for the super coxman. I love you guys and wish I could be there when you open this. I hope that Al can wear it on one of the podcasts.
Well, here it is, Rhonda. Here it is.
Here it is.
Right?
Yes. I hope that Al can wear it on one of the podcasts so everyone can see how incredibly sexy he is with it on. You see? There you go. You're always always like saying you're not sexy. Every time I say you're sexy, you say... Sorry. It's right here.
Yeah.
Someone else thinks you're sexy.
That's Rhonda's being very polite, especially being sick. You know, I got sick again. Tony's been sick. He's here. And I woke up today feeling whatever the hell's going around. But, you know, I look like 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. But thank you, Ron. I really appreciate that.
And for you, my dear friend, Tony, this picture, because you are so very special as you continue to walk in the calm after the storm every single day. And you are a true testimony of faith to never give up. Thank you, Rhonda. And last but not least, a special candle that I made in remembrance of all of the victims and victims' families who suffered tragic and unspeakable deaths at the hands of all of these worthless and despicable serial killers. That's awesome.
Isn't it? And we waited, Rhonda, because it really touched us that this, of course, the Cape, but we wanted to show everybody before Tony lit the candle. But this will be in his room, and it'll be lit.
Yeah.
And that you already had next to your bed on the dresser.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I pray that their souls have found peace and that the families have found some sort of peace and closure. When you light this candle, I pray that each and every one of them will know that they will never be forgotten. That's great.
Yes.
Keep up the good work, Tony and Al, and I send my love to you and your family. With much love, Rhonda.
I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Isn't that the truth?
Isn't that the truth?
You're damn right.
I'm a perfect...
living proof.
Living proof.
So, thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you so much, Rhonda.
Was really thoughtful and really planned out.
So if you don't want to buy us coffee, send gifts. Send gifts.
You've known Rhonda a long time, right? All the way back to the book.
The book. Yeah. She read the book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. And this cape. I was feeling sick. It's like I have this creeping crud that's going around again. I put the cape on and I'm feeling better. I mean, I can do this. What do you think?
Isn't it funny? On my PlayStation 5 right now,
yeah,
I'm playing Spider-Man 2. So, I don't know.
You might see the Coxman come flying in.
Into my room?
Out of nowhere. Yeah. What do you think?
I'd love it. I'd sit you down and I'd have a great conversation with you.
I like that.
You do? You like it, don't you?
I love John, too. I love John about the Axl Rose. Isn't that the truth?
He's a fucking asshole. Yeah. Not you, John.
No.
Axl Rose. Yeah. A fucking asshole.
But when I saw that text, I was laughing because it is true.
Let me just say. Guns N' Roses. I've seen them 6 times in concert. Axl Rose on all 6 shows except one came out 2 hours late. Now, who's the fucking asshole? Axl Rose or myself? Makes sense, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sitting there like an idiot.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Before we get into the show, everybody, I want to report that over the holidays, we heard from our good friend. Remember the one we were asking prayers for? We heard from her. Yes. She's wearing the cape.
Yeah, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yes. Our good friend, who is battling for her life, we heard from her, and I'm happy to tell you all that she has had all positive news so far from her doctors.
Awesome.
The prayers do work. So keep them coming, because she has a rough battle ahead of her still. She's tough, and we know with our prayers God's help and her strong will and toughness. And she is tough.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She will win this battle.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Keep those prayers coming.
Gosh. Yeah. Things were so positive.
Yeah.
We're talking about Rhonda. We're talking about the Coxman having fucking superpowers. You know, things were positive and beautiful. And we're talking about Jesus Christ and miracles and blessings.
Prayers.
And prayers. And now. And now. Back to the story of the cannibal creator. And what we call visiting a monster. Remember, this is the only visit, other than detectives, that he ever had while he was in prison. That should tell you all you need to know about this guy.
Yeah,
no friends, no family, nobody.
Well, he had family, but
yeah.
They don't want us to. He's an asshole.
Yeah. They don't want to have anything to do with
him. No.
But before we get into the visit, let's hear the story right from Joe Matheny's mouth, how he wound up in prison.
How'd you get caught, Joe?
Huh?
How'd you get caught?
Pretty much I did it to myself. I was just tired of doing what I was really doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the best way to say it is, it was December 15th of the Christmas party, company Christmas party.
Okay.
Is when I got caught, me and my boss, we both got a little argument at the Christmas party, and we got kicked out. He got kicked out of his own Christmas party by his wife. Anyway, me and him went to a little show bar down there, strip bar, and we partied there. Then we went back to about 1 o'clock in the morning. Went back to the company, and then he was going to go home.
Okay.
He dropped me off. He was going to drop me off, but when we turned the corner, it looked like every Baltimore City cop in town was in there tearing that place apart, looking for a bot. And that's when they found one. That's when they locked me up. But the way it happened before that...
Wait, in the bar they were looking for a body?
Huh?
Did you say in the bar they were looking for a body?
Not in the bar, up there at the pallet company.
Okay.
They drove me back from the bar. It was about 2 months before that. The one girl I had up there at the trailer,
mm-hmm.
She got out of the trailer. She had on was a pair of panties and a sweater. And she ran down to the main road, and the guy with the truck took her over to the service station. They called the cops.
Okay.
Cops came up, and one cop came up there, and he put me on the ground and said, you know, said, the girl down there said the story, said something that I was going to kill her, put her with the rest of them, or cook her up. Well, he said it was such a far-fetched story, he couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I can see why he would say that.
Yeah, he said, I know she's a prostitute down there. He goes, I don't see her pressing charges.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he took that report, he didn't look for nothing. He didn't ask me for my ID. I said she stole my ID and ran up and took off. Well, he went to walk out the thing. He had to look down there. He saw my court release. My jail release papers, I had just got out 2 months before that.
For what, though?
With the two guys up with an axe over there on the Tascoke Statue Bridge, and they found out about that. And that's when they,
How did you get out, though, for chopping up somebody with an axe?
I couldn't prove it was me.
Oh, I see. But it was, obviously. I mean,
yes, it was. And it was them. That was the two homeless dudes I told you about. And there was two more prostitutes and an old black dude down there that was the guy that was fishing.
Mm-hmm.
It was under there, too. The rest were up there at the pallet company.
please, guys, it's the same thing. And by the way, he's really tough to be here. You can hear it in his voice. I give you all the credit, bud.
I owed it to you guys, though.
That's what you said.
Right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's go back to what we just heard. All these guys, and we've mentioned it before, they're tired of killing. Oh, I'm so tired of what I was doing.
Huh? Yeah. Like the great art.
Yeah.
When he fucking gave himself in, right?
Yeah.
He's standing there signaling to the helicopter that's watching him.
I'm here. Yeah, right? The great art.
The great
no,
art.
No, but a lot of them say that, you know?
No, you're not.
That's bullshit.
Just fucking admit it.
Yeah.
You got caught and you hate it. But now you're going to, play that game. Yeah. I got sick of killing women. I got sick of it.
How did you like him saying they got kicked out of their own Christmas party? And that was the boss. Because I guess they were in an argument or they were not acting party-like. And I think Joe Stein's wife kicked him out. And that's what we had heard. But Matheny talked about it here. Just really interesting phone call. Really interesting. Because it was 2 months prior. They left the Christmas party. They went to a strip club. And then they went and the owner was going to drop Fat Joe off at the pallet company where he was staying. And when they turned the corner, like Matheny said, it was packed with cops. They were all over the place. Because 2 months prior to that happening, a girl got away. And she got away, told the police that this guy said he was going to kill her and he was going to cook her like he did the rest of them and serve her body to the public. And the cops, they thought, well, this girl's a hooker. She's on drugs. She's out of her fucking mind. And they, all they did, and you could hear Matheny, you could hear his voice. When the cop came, he even said that to him. We know she's a hooker, and the story she was telling us was just, it was crazy. But this cop, as he was walking out, was observant enough because Fat Ass had just gotten out of jail for the murders of the two bums under the bridge, right? And you heard Tony ask him, you chopped up these two guys. How the hell did you get out? Well, they didn't have enough evidence. So he slipped through the fucking cracks. He was almost ready to slip through the cracks again. But thank God this police officer saw the release papers. And he looked at them and he left. And we don't know, but obviously they decided to check this girl's story out a little more thorough. And that was 2 months. And they came back with a search warrant. And that's when they finally arrested this animal.
Yeah.
Thank God for that guy. He saved a lot of lives because Matheny wasn't going to stop. I don't care what he was saying. He wasn't going to stop.
No.
I'm tired of killing.
Mm-hmm.
Bullshit. You're lucky the Coxman wasn't there, Joe. Because I'd have flown in and nailed his ass. Right?
I love it. That was kind of a rant. And you know I like it when you rant.
I know, and I'm not feeling too good, so it's hard to rant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard not to rant with this guy. All right.
Hold on, though. Let's talk about the strip club.
What about it?
Just imagine being a stripper, right?
Okay.
And then you see this fucking piece of shit walk in through the front door. They gather around.
Yeah.
The strippers.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, gosh, I hope he doesn't ask me for a dance.
Don't be the guy, not this guy, not this guy, not this guy. Right? And what's he do?
Yeah. And then he's inviting you back to his trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a very grandiose idea. Right?
Yeah.
You like that word, grandiose?
Grandiose, I like it.
Yeah, fucking great.
Okay, so in this episode, we're going to take you guys back to July 2010 when we went to visit Matheny.
Grandiose.
And we're hoping when you watch our videos that you'll feel like you were there with us. But that's the point. You got to watch them. You got to watch us on YouTube. It's worth it.
It's great.
So,
grandiose.
This is what we hope to accomplish when we decided to visit Joe Matheny, a.k.a.
Tiny.
And I can definitely tell you guys, it wasn't because of his warm personality. Am I right?
Oh.
Okay.
So, I mean, he really liked us.
But, yeah.
But it still felt like he wanted to kill us.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no doubt. Okay. So we had two visits scheduled at the prison, which was a miracle in itself. You remember, Matheny never had a visitor. Anyone other than the detectives and then Tony and I. That was it. So we wanted to find and visit some people that knew Joe back in the day when he was out of prison and just to see, you know, what their feelings were. Now, Joe had given us specific directions as to where he buried his first kill. That was the little red-haired girl. So we were going to try and see if the area existed and possibly find where this young girl was buried. Because he was very specific on these directions. We also wanted to find the bridge where he had murdered not two, but five innocent people. And he tasted human flesh for the first time under that bridge. We wanted to find it. We also wanted to visit his neighborhood where he lived with his wife and son. And we wanted to find the bar where he hung out and lured prostitutes to go with him.
Kind of like John Belushi. The bar? The whole fucking the bar! Animal House.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we did visit some of these areas, huh, Tom?
Oh.
We'll get into that.
We're lucky we're sitting here.
Oh, yeah. And then we're going to visit the pallet company where he worked and see if anyone remembers him. And last, but certainly not least, we will try and find out if Tiny's barbecue stand ever existed and if he truly can be called the cannibal creator.
So we tape most of this, and this is the first any of it has been seen. And that's the truth.
That is.
Yes.
You will other be, than our family.
Yes.
We charged Joe to see it.
Why not, right? Fucking take that fucker for a ride. As much as I can get out of him. Right?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
That's what brothers are for.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You notice something, though. I haven't talked about his wife in a long time.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Come on. Anna, she put that thing together for you, that concoction. It helped you a lot.
It did.
Say you're sorry and thank her because that was some kind of potion she put together.
I'm sorry, Anna. I am. Thank you very much for the potion. Anyways, you need to check us out on YouTube. You'll be able to hear most of it, but you really should go there to our YouTube channel to watch.
Yeah, it's worth just seeing the cape.
Right? Yes, it is.
It is.
And that's not some like cheap piece of shit like cape. No. That is really awesome.
It is.
Rhonda, she outdid herself.
She did.
Wow. Okay.
Here is a recreation of my impression of that first visit with Joe Matheny, a.k.a. Tiny, back in July 2010. As we pulled up, and I remember I felt such an empty feeling looking at this monstrosity before me. A monstrosity that is there to act as a cage for people that just can't cut it in society. Isn't that great? What a concept.
Yeah.
No, if you're a human being and you're given all these rights and freedoms and you break that law, you fucking break that law, you get locked up like a fucking animal in a cage, and that's where you belong.
That's right.
Exactly.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. The prison looked all right from an outside view, but it is a monster itself in the way that it can shield such depression, rage, anger, violence, and corruption. And its solid walls still smiling on the outside on a sunny day where the birds just chirp away. Wow, that reads like poetry right there.
It does.
Yes. I remember the walk from the parking lot to the prison. The heat and humidity were unbearable, and that's the fucking truth.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like I'm
I remember
over-exaggerating, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Terrible. I mean, Maryland.
Just brutal.
Yeah, brutal. And he weighs a little bit more than me, just a little bit. I didn't think he was going to fucking make it. Serious. Right? I mean, and we were sweating. You remember that? Just from the car.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible.
Yeah. Of course, we had to park at like the back of the fucking parking lot.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
It reminds me of the movie Vacation when Griswold parks at the back of the parking lot. Dad, why we parked at the back of the parking lot? Well, Russ, so we can be the first ones out. Okay.
All right.
I remember the walk from the parking lot. It was horrible. The humidity was unbearable, and it seemed like we would never get there. It was like being in hell. And hell was right in front of us.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, just maybe, God was trying to warn us, don't go in there.
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. What you see as you approach the visitor's building is endless fencing and an eternity of barbed wire. I always wondered why inmates don't just go over the barbed wire. Haven't you always thought that?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Well, why can't they just kind of like
flip over it?
Yeah. But after you see it up close, I must have been smoking crack or shooting heroin. To even have thought that nonsense. That shit's some sharp stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's no making it.
Yeah. Could you see that fat fuck trying to climb over that barbed wire?
I would have liked to.
That would have been great. Prison is not a nice place. In fact, it's probably the worst place on this entire earth. So sit back and imagine you're there as we walk down the prison corridor for that first visit with the cannibal creator. We were now in a long corridor, and a guard directed us towards the visiting area. We were expecting a closed room or a glass enclosed area, but this was different. We came upon a large room with a big rectangular type seating area. Each prisoner had an area to visit in. No glass, no cage, nothing but air, and about 3 feet between the visitor, and about 3 feet between the visitor and the prisoner. We peeked around the corner, and about 10 feet from us, we saw Tiny for the first time in person. He looked irritated and very big. He looked like he wanted to fucking tear the cannibal's fuck. No, he looked like he wanted to tear the coxman's throat out.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah. I'm going like this. You know, take his ass.
If I had the cape, I could have taken him.
You could have. Oh my gosh. Well, when he saw us, he had a fake smile on his face and came right up to us and gave us each a big bear hug. There was no one to stop him from crushing the life out of us. I still think I could have kicked his ass. Mm-hmm. My dad and I had visited many prisons, and this was the first time I was ever worried.
As I was, too.
Yeah?
But I was fucking worried, yeah. Remember that bear hug? I mean, it was a bear hug. It was,
yeah.
You know, he was trying to show off.
I kind of felt like my head was a pimple and he could have just
popped it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe took us to an area that was assigned to him. There were 2 folding chairs on one side where we sat in a metal table with a small metal stool attached to it for the prisoner. As the visit progressed, this became a problem because the little stool was killing Matheny's fat ass. Remember, he kept saying that the stool was like going up all the way in his ass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he kept talking about it.
Exactly.
We just ignore him, you know. Fuck.
My brother, though, he'd be able to handle that stool. He's used to objects in his ass.
He's coming for you.
He's coming for me. We had 2 days with Matheny, so over the next 2 episodes, we'll try to cover the important things we talked about based on our notes. Even though I had been writing to him for 4 years and had spoken to him on the phone, it was still incredibly uncomfortable. Remember, no one but detectives have ever visited him during the 15 years he's been locked up. No one said a word for about a minute. It seemed like an eternity.
Yeah.
Then Matheny leaned forward and said in a serious voice, "You know, I was really the only one who helped those girls get off of drugs. They looked very peaceful as I was throwing dirt on their dead, stinking asses. There are a lot more out there who need help. Why don't you take up where I left off?" My dad and I were looking at each other, and Joe started laughing and said, "I'm just fucking with you."
But he wasn't. He really wasn't. Being face to face with this monster, you could see it in his eyes. He loved what he did, and he probably wanted to kill us at that moment. In person, he was a very scary individual. He looked like a killer.
His eyes were black. They were dead. He kind of looked like a shark. And he seemed very nervous, remember? Unhinged. And Tony, we were worried. We just kept giving each other, you know, kind of side glances like, what the fuck is going to happen here, you know? There's two small cards in big room. I mean, it was a big room. It was a big rectangle.
You like it? We had two fucking midgets.
And they were little guys.
They were. We're not joking. Yeah. I mean, we're talking.
They were little.
Uh-huh.
Neither one of them would have been able to stop this 525-pound killer if he wanted to attack us. No question about it, right?
No doubt about it.
Tony and I have talked over the seasons about the mass of sanity that serial killers wear, and we have visited some of the worst, many of the worst killers, and they all, up until this point, they all tried to hide who they were. They wore masks. Not fucking Matheny. Not Tiny. He wore it like a badge of honor.
Yeah.
He was a killer and he was proud of it. And there was absolutely no question about it. The first visit was kind of a feeling out process. He asked a lot of questions about Tony, his injury, you know, things that Tony had talked about in the letters, what his life was like on the outside. And he loved Tony's stories about Las Vegas. Loved them. So we tried to talk about his mom, remember?
Yes. Yes.
But he didn't say much. He said she worked all the time. She did her best, but obviously it wasn't good enough. And you could tell just by the way he talked, he didn't have the capacity to love. You could see it and you could hear it in his voice. Being face to face with him, definitely could see it.
Going up to Matheny Jr.'s house, we believe he is the either brother or nephew of Joe Matheny. He's going to talk to him, maybe. He might get shot.
He might get shot.
We might all get shot. Who knows? He's obviously a patriot. He's got nice 4th of July stuff there. And there he is. Let's see if he'll talk to him. Shutting the camera off now.
We showed this short video to you guys to prove that we actually talked with his cousin. We wanted to film him, but he refused, but he did invite us in to talk. This is all about the truth and trying to verify or disprove what Matheny has been writing about his mom and his upbringing. So, we got invited in, talked to his cousin and his cousin's son. They were both there.
Big fans.
Yeah.
Of Matheny.
Oh, yeah.
They were big fans.
I don't think so. So from our notes, we took notes, you know, when you come out, you take notes so you don't forget because it's a long time ago. But he basically said that Joe was full of shit and always has been. His mom, the cousin told us, was a very hardworking woman. She worked two jobs and supported her kids on her own.
Mm.
You could tell he had no use for Joe and said he was always blaming everyone but himself for his problems. Now, does that sound like Joe?
Yes.
In his letters and his phone calls?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. He admitted that Tiny was...
Hold on, though.
Yeah.
It pretty much sounds like all the assholes I've talked to over the years.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
They all kind of fall into the same mold.
It's true.
Yeah.
So he admitted that Tiny was a piece of shit asshole, but he never thought that he could do the things he did. I remember we asked him, did you ever visit Tiny?
Fuck no.
It's exactly what he said. He yelled it out, fuck no. And his son was cracking up over all this. He obviously hated him and said he knew nothing about Joe's crimes. And we asked him, what do you think of him killing women and feeding their flesh to unsuspecting customers at his barbecue stand? And he waved it off. He said, that's all bullshit. that Matheny made up in his mind. No way did he believe this. Now, he didn't know. It was just his opinion because he knew Joe. He called Joe a punk, called him a little punk. And I don't know, after he half crushed my ribs, I don't know if I would have called him a punk. But he said he was always a pussy. So it didn't surprise him that he picked on women. But no fucking way did he cook them and feed them to people. He just didn't buy it. He was convinced that this was just a story that Joe made up for attention. And then he politely kicked us out of his house.
Yeah.
He was very nice. He really was.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was a nice guy. And I was impressed that he talked to us. But I think he talked to us because he hated Joe so much. He wanted to get on the record, right?
Yes.
You're up, bud.
And we put him on the record.
Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here we go. So back to the visit. I saw the teardrops he had tattooed on his face. And I asked him if they represented his victims. And he says, no, they for the ones I was never caught for. He said it like it, like a badge of honor, like, you know, he was like proud. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, like an asshole. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He laughed, and then he actually started talking about them, which we will get into later.
That was the one thing that surprised me. He was so open about everything.
He
and,
was.
And I guess that was part of his bravado. Look at me. Just like him and his three buddies walking through that prison, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Look at us. Nobody does shit in here without our okay.
Fuck yeah, right? You know?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's probably the most open out of all of the killers I've spoken to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a great art, but I think Joe might have him beat. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the great art, you know. I can't talk about this on the phone.
Yes. The fuck
you do it? Why?
Why can't you talk on the phone, Art?
Yeah,
I mean, you already got 250 years. What are they going to do? Add another 250? Oh my god! Fucking crazy.
Yeah,
few of them said that to you, right?
Oh yes.
Well, let's not talk on the phone about it.
Yeah,
assholes.
But I'd also like to talk about assholes that put teardrops on their fucking face.
You've always said that.
I've always said this. Okay, now let me make myself clear. All right? If you kill somebody and you're an asshole and you decide to put a teardrop on your face by your eye, don't you think that's kind of a stupid thing to do? Because anytime law enforcement of any kind, any level, sees that teardrop on your face, they might look into you a little bit. Right?
Oh, yeah. I would say. So,
correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you are right.
Yeah, but you've got to be a real fucking asshole.
You're right on the money.
Yeah, to do that.
Yeah.
So I asked him if he really liked fucking dead bodies. Yes! This is my fucking favorite part. I love this part.
That was amazing.
It was. What?
He became your mentor.
Yes.
Didn't he?
He didn't. Okay. First off, I'm a fucking mentor. He's not a mentor. I'm a mentor, right? We've discussed this before. I mentor in a lot of different subjects. But this asshole, he was becoming my mentor on this subject. Fucking dead bodies.
He leaned forward. Yes. I remember. Remember?
I remember. He was quite, he was proud.
Proud. He was proud of it.
Now, this is fantastic. Remember when we did that whole thing about, because I'm always wondering, okay.
Well,
what?
Go ahead. You're wondering.
It's a fantastic subject. And I wonder how you make light of a subject like this. How you bring it up to somebody, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, he gave you the tip.
He gave me
the tip. He's the one that told you.
Yeah.
You find a mortuary.
Yeah.
And you find the right guy.
The guy behind the guy?
Slip him 100. Yeah, the guy behind the guy. That's who you always got to look for. And you slip him $100.
Yeah.
You know, that's the tip he gave you, remember?
And yeah,
he
but $100.
He was very serious. He told you, Tony, this is something you have to do in your lifetime.
This is this guy's job, though. Don't you think I should give him like a grand at least?
Are you crazy?
Serious?
$100, man.
$100?
$100, take your pick.
Pull the slab out.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she's your younger corpse, like 17, 18, kind of warm. She just killed herself or something like that.
Well, he told you, make sure you have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Make sure they see it and know that you're willing to spend it. That was his tip. Joe Roy Matheny.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't afraid to talk about it, was he?
No, not at all.
Okay. I think we've covered that enough.
Yeah. But you know it's a fan favorite.
Yeah.
And it is true.
I know before when we talked about it, you guys probably thought, no, it is true. We were there sitting across from this guy, 3 feet from him, and he leaned forward and said, Tony, and he basically said exactly what we said before. You got to tip somebody, and you got to try it in your lifetime. You'll love it, I guarantee you. Right?
Yeah.
So.
In a mortuary, I mean, there's no, the maggots aren't there, remember? Because he said you got to push the maggots aside. That's if you bury it and you dig it up. And
that's what he used to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Him and Bundy.
It's not classy.
Yeah.
It's not classy at all. Huh. So now, I asked Joe about his first kill, okay? He had given us really good directions as to where he buried her. I asked if he thought we could find her and if there was anything else he could tell us, it would really help us. Now, this was Joe Matheny's response. I told you where she's at. Look at all the clues, and you'll know I was telling the truth. I gave you the spot. You can do whatever you want with it. She's there. I did it. What else do you want me to say? Take it for what it's worth. Just write the fucking book. Why do you got to go digging around?
Yeah, that was it. Word for word.
Word for word.
Well, we wrote it down.
Yeah.
Now, he's getting worked up, Matheny, when he's telling Tony this, right?
Mm.
And all of a sudden, he stood up, and he's complaining about that fucking stool.
He's yelling at the midget guard.
He's yelling at him, and he's standing, and the guard comes over. Tony and I are sitting in the middle, and the guard says, sit your ass down, and he's there. Fucking stool is going up my ass.
Fuck, I had to laugh.
And the guard goes, I don't give a fuck. Sit down, that's the rules. And then you heard other people, and Matheny is going like this. He's looking around, 525 pounds, and he's leering at us. And he's like, I'm fucking done. This is bullshit. And the guard says, you're going to be done. Sit the fuck down. Then the other guard came running over. And now Tony and I, we really did. We thought we were going to be in the middle of a fucking riot.
A prison riot.
Because Matheny didn't give a fuck. You could tell. He was gone.
Don't you love it, though? He stands up and he's going like this. Yeah. Come on. To other prisoners that are around.
Because we're like Joe, and he's, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. What are they going to do to me? Fuck them.
This could have been a very bad situation very quickly.
He looked like a maniac.
Yeah, he did.
He really did. So then he sits down and he says, I don't want you fucking coming back tomorrow. We're like, what are you talking about? We had a lot of stuff to cover with this guy.
Yeah.
And we come all the way from Las Vegas
to Maryland.
And he said, my ass can't take it, boys. I'm sorry. I don't want to visit tomorrow. I don't want to, I'm not coming. So we said, Joe, we came from Las Vegas. We flew here. It was expensive. It's a long trip. I'll tell you what. We won't come tomorrow. We'll rearrange our schedule. We'll come the day after or whatever it takes you, 2 days, and we'll visit you then. How's that? And he calmed down then. He finally calmed down.
Yeah.
And he lightened up. He made a joke of it, and then he agreed. But that was the scariest situation I'd ever been in, yeah. In a prison especially.
Yeah.
Because what's he got to lose?
Yeah.
He could have killed both of us. What are they going to do?
And what were those two fucking puny guards going to do?
Nothing.
Nothing.
They look scared. The one guy looks scared.
Yeah.
He's about this big.
Yeah.
And he's standing there. He said, you better sit down. And I'm thinking, oh, fuck, what are you going to do about it?
Exactly, right?
I hope you're armed, but they weren't.
They weren't.
They can't be.
No. Fucking, that little guard. Joe couldn't have kicked his ass even. I'm picking on you today, Joe, because I'm using you as ammunition.
He loves you, Joey.
I do love you. I'm sorry. Exactly, though. Keep that fucking money coming, though, all right? I do mean that.
All right. Come on, pal.
Gosh.
You're up.
Gosh.
Okay.
All right. We had a lot of investigating to do, right? A lot. So we changed our schedule, which I hated to do because it's like we're taking orders from this fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I don't take orders, especially from this fucking piece of shit. Sorry.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm. So we did change our schedule and we got busy. We're going to actually take you with us through videos. So those watching on YouTube will see these videos for the first time. And the rest of you will miss out seeing the serial killer whisperer back in 2010. I was a fat fuck back then.
You had a little weight on you. But that was a medicine. That's not fair. It's that fucking medicine that you take for your brain injury. So
you're not just...
No, I'm not just saying that. I got a cape on.
Yeah, you do. I can't kick you in the face because you'll do some whip-ass move.
Get crazy in here.
Yeah. Seriously, this is some amazing shit that we're going to show. And just listening won't cut it. It won't cut at all. You have to watch it.
Hit it.
Hello. I'm in Baltimore County. This letter right here was written on Tuesday, March 2nd, 2010, at 10 p.m. This letter right here discloses the exact location where this little girl, the red-haired girl, Joe Matheny's first murder when he was 15 years old, is buried. The only people who come here to visit me is the homicide detectives. About every 6 months trying to pump me for information about my past. I am going to give you the locations of some of my dead bitches. I will not tell you the actual spot where to dig, but I will put you within at least 50 feet of them. My first kill was the little red-haired girl. She has been laying in the same spot where I buried her September 19th, 1970. She is buried in a patch of woods. It is located on in Baltimore County. She is just about 60 feet from the 695 Interstate Highway. They were just starting to build that road back then. Now, you can see between this letter and the other two letters that I have read about the death of the little girl and her location, comparisons of the highway back in the woods. So we're gonna go out there and we're gonna take a look at it and see if we can find her remains. We will be filming out there. So I'll see you later.
Hey, Dad.
Okay, we're out here, we're looking for it.
Here we are, looking for the body of Joe Nathaniel Berry. Out here, his first murder.
Come closer, I don't know if I can hear you.
Here we are in Baltimore, Maryland, Baltimore County, looking for the body of the first victim of Joseph Roy Nathaniel. And hoping that we don't get shot out here too.
Hey, look out for snakes and stuff.
Yeah. Pretty spooky. You need a picture? It could be right here, and we just don't know it. Because this is definitely where he said it was. We're in the area, just looking for a rock. Forty years is a long time. A long time. It's pretty dense. You find something? Okay.
What do you think of this?
Oh.
It's not a rock though.
Boy, it sure looks like something though, doesn't it?
It looks like a marker.
Yeah, let me. Sure looks like a marker, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Here.
Be careful.
Holy shit. There's a rock there, too.
It's about the size of a kid's body, too.
Look at that, look at that.
My wife told me to bring a shovel and I didn't. It's interesting because the ground is indented here.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes, like there could have been.
If I had a shovel, I'd dig here. wouldn't you?
Yeah.
This is a lot closer to the 65 feet.
Yeah.
Remember, cars passing by.
Well, it's secluded in the woods here, but that indentation's about right.
Yeah, it sure is. Okay, guys.
Yes. This could very well be it.
There's the thing. We're about 60 feet from the highway, guys.
Yeah.
What do you think chances are he's telling the truth?
I think they're pretty good. From the looks of all of this.
All right.
Well. Looking at him yesterday, the way he said it, you know what he said? I gave you the spot. You can do whatever you want with it. It's there. I did it. Take what do you want me to say? Worth. What do you want me to say? He said, take it for what it's worth.
Let me have the camera.
He goes, just write the book. Why you got to go digging around?
The only reason I'd been to graves before that were people hitting people. The only reason I'm impressed with that one is it sunk down.
Yeah.
So how do you like that shit? But we're just getting started. My hair, huh? It's pretty fucking cool. Thank you. Thank you for the compliments. My hair. It looked like Elvis. I look like a fat Elvis.
No, you did not.
In fucking shorts, and I'm wearing sandals, flip-flops. Why am I wearing flip-flops?
I don't know.
We're in a forest.
Yeah, I have no idea.
No. I still look good, though. All right. It was really creepy out there.
Yeah.
Really creepy. You heard me say, watch out for snakes. The one thing I can tell you for sure is it was exactly how Joe described it. Not only in his letters, but when we were there face to face with his fat ass. Now, check this out.
Pimlico, home of the Preakness. Watched it many times on TV, but never before have we been here at the track. Also, this is a very important place for the serial killer Whisperer. This beautiful, beautiful neighborhood is also the hunting ground for serial killer Joe Roy Matheny. Earlier, we were standing at his first victim's gravesite. Didn't dig because we didn't have a shovel, but we'll get into that later. We left the gravesite, or what we thought or think is the gravesite. It certainly looked like everything Joe has described in the past. Now we're looking for a McDonald's where Joe Matheny got his last victim. Thank you. Nice talk.
This is important because I had to physically restrain the coxman from going into the track to bed a little bit.
Uh-oh.
He's really good though. At the track.
I used to be. I don't know. I don't even know if I could read a form anymore. But
I mean, he understands all that stuff.
It was fun.
What's it called? Handicapping horses.
Mm-hmm.
I will give the coxman. He doesn't even need the fucking cape to do a good job at that. Okay, guys. I had to physically restrain him from going in there. We didn't dig because we didn't have a fucking shovel. You can hear the asshole we were with say, my wife told me to bring a shovel. Can't you just hear their conversation? Hey, honey, it's kind of exciting that we're going out to see if we can find a grave today where Joe Matheny said he buried his first kill. Honey says, "Don't you want to bring a shovel, honey?" "No, that's all right. We probably won't need it." Asshole. Bag of dicks.
Very funny about the track, Tony. Very funny. His ass would have been right in there next. What's your picks, Dad? What are your picks? Come on. I want to bet. I want to bet an exacta. Come on, Dad.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Then you got Mom. I wish we did get a chance to go in there. I'd never been that.
No?
No. No. It's a good track. Anyway, we took it upon ourselves to get a shovel, and the next day we went to where we thought the grave was, and here is how it looked.
And we're out to do our dig for that little red-haired girl, Joe Matheny's first victim.
Miles, exit right.
He murdered her when he was 15 years old. She was 12 years old. We have a good feeling that we stumbled upon the grave yesterday, but, you know, it really is a shot in the dark because there is a lot of land back there. But this area just looks and feels like a possible gold mine.
Right.
We'll see you there.
That's exactly the way he described it in his letters, right?
Yes. It all comes together.
He always said he put lime with plastic bag, right?
Yeah.
Careful?
Yeah.
He always said that he took plastic bag, put it, lined the hall with it.
So you can see we're still digging. And I think what's important is we continue to find this white plastic material. And it's important because Joe Matheny told us when we were visiting him in prison that he always lined the graves that he dug with white plastic and then poured lime in over the bodies. He said that he had done this with the little red-haired girl that was his first kill. So I think it's important. We're also finding a lot of things that are weird-looking. They don't look like rocks. We're really not sure what they are because we really don't know what bones would look like after 40 years. I mean, that's a long time.
There's more of bag, you see it?
Yeah. In white. You see the white?
Yeah.
It's odd why this bag is here and why it's, I mean, after all this time, you would expect it to break up.
It doesn't look like a rock. Does it?
I have to tell you that these videos were a lot longer than we were showing. We had to condense them because we didn't think it would be real exciting listening to us walking through the woods for hours, which we fucking did, and hearing a shovel digging, which we did buy, finally.
Searching for bodies. It's not an easy thing.
No, it isn't.
No.
None of us knew what bones should look like after 40 years, but there sure were a lot of odd-looking things. that were obviously not rocks.
Yeah.
Mm. Ooh. Big Chuck.
Big Chuck. What a great movie that was.
Yes. All right.
Here is a video from way back in 2010 summing up what our first day was like.
Hello. Today is Monday, July 11th, 2010. It was an exhausting day. We got a lot accomplished. You know, I mean, some of the neighborhoods we went to today, Joe Matheny's job, I mean, we got all this on film, and these were rough neighborhoods. And it was very interesting to see and walk where a very evil person did his hunting, his recreational killing, I should say. You know, probably the most bone-chilling thing that happened this afternoon was when we went to the spot where Joe Matheny told me he killed his first 12-year-old victim when he was 15 years old. He raped her, had anal sex with her, and bashed her head in. We went to that spot, and everything that he has said to me in person and written to me by letter really comes together and makes sense. Like I just said, it makes sense in how it paints a picture, because when you're reading the text on a piece of paper, and I have a very vivid, creative imagination, but it's still hard for even me to paint a picture and know what this whole area looks like and the suffering and the extreme agonizing pain that this little girl went through before he took her life. But talking to Joe and then going to the spot, it all comes together and paints a very clear picture. I just would like to say that as I walked through this wooded area, each step that I took, it's like in my head, I swear, I could hear this little girl whispering through the leaves and branches, "Please, please find me and send me home."
Well, that's a wrap for today. I sure hope that you'll take the time to watch me and the Coxman on YouTube.
13 years ago.
Gosh.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we did a lot of work getting those videos short and so we could play them for you. So watch them.
And I lost a lot of weight.
I'm sending Joe Matheny's ghost over to your house.
His ghost.
Oh.
Yeah. Seriously, these are videos that have never been seen before by anyone. And when I mean anyone, I mean anyone.
That's right.
Except like my
immediate family.
Don't miss next week when we will prove if Tiny's barbecue stand ever existed. or if it's just some bullshit that Matheny made up to his to enhance his reputation as one of the biggest scumbags that has ever lived. You could see him talking about that in prison, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
About serving women.
Oh, yeah. You ain't gonna believe what I did.
Exactly. Or when I was a long haul trucker, what I did. I'm not gonna say it.
No.
I'm not gonna say it. As always, take care. Stay safe, and remember, always walk in the calm after the storm. Good job, Coxman.
Great job on the Cape, Rhonda.
Yes.
This is Joey Siaglia, and thank you for listening to Murder Phone, hosted by my brother Tony Siaglia, the subject of the best-selling book, The Serial Killer Whisperer, and his co-host, who also happens to be our father, Al Siaglia. For more information on the show, please visit murderphone.com, where you can ask questions, link to our social media accounts, and much, much more. If you'd like to help support the Murder Phone podcast, please go to our Buy Me a Coffee page and sign up for a membership package. You can access all kinds of cool, exclusive content that only official Murder Phoniacs can get. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and an iTunes review would be much appreciated.
Well, leave one if you liked it, but if you didn't, fuck it.
Murder Phone was written and produced by Tony Siaglia and Al Siaglia, and recorded at the Level 9 Studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. A special thanks to our friend Justin Borrego for his editing magic. Join us next week for another exciting episode of Murder Phone.
Before we go, I want to give a huge shout out to all those living this life after brain injury, our new normal, as so many call it. You are awesome. Keep going. I know I will. And to my listeners that know someone living with a brain injury or other mental health issues, please be kind, be patient, and most of all, be understanding. Remember, they are doing the best they can.